club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the FT LOL podcast. On this podcast, we like to travel, whether that's travelling back in time to look at nostalgic football, travelling overseas to cover the European leagues and the World Cup. And what we'll be covering today is some players who absolutely love to travel, as we'll be ranking the top 10 journeymen in football history. And joining me today, I could think of no other better guest than the Hopeless Wanderer himself, Adam from the Hopeless Wanderer podcast. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Jack. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Bit tired some days these days, but
I bet those kids are keeping you awake, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Good stuff.
Doing well.
Yeah, keeping well. Flat out at work at the moment, but I'm grateful to be invited to discuss this interesting topic. I'm sure we've had lots of conversations offline trying to debate how we're going to do this. And I'm sure you're going to let the listener know about how we went about this process. But at first I thought I was going to struggle, to be fair. But then I think I started to randomly have thoughts of certain players and it certainly helped, let's put it that way. I didn't have to really search too hard. Even going into this, like randomly, I had another addition that I had to work out in my top 10. So, I'll let you kind of explain to the listener how we work this one out anyway.
Yeah, it's quite a strict criteria. I think the general rule of thumb for journeymen, where you fall into journeymen, is 10 clubs. 10 clubs minimum. So that's what we said for that is 10, I suppose, 10 spells at different clubs. So you've got examples of players that have kind of come back later on in their career, for Drogba, for Chelsea, for example. That would have counted as 2 spells. But in each one of those spells at the club, they must have had 12 appearances. So they must have had 10 different clubs and then at least 12 appearances in each one. And that ruled out a lot, that magic number of 12.
Yeah.
To be fair. The other thing is if they've gone on loan and then it's been made permanent, that's just one. You can't get that counted twice. So Martin Odegaard this year, who else was it? I think Dean Henderson had a couple of loan spells 2 seasons in a row. That would have all counted as one. So it's... Yeah, I struggled at first to get 10 names and then the order as well. Like this was hard. Like there's some names that I thought had to be in there, but it's just putting them in the orders as well.
I think I went about it in terms of criteria of just looking at longevity, the clubs they played for, and we'll go through the list, I'm sure, to kind of delve into it a bit more detail, but I found the prioritization bit easier for me personally. It was more the research of these players, like we said. So for example, we weren't counting second spells initially, for example, and then we decided that actually when we looked into it, it was harder than we thought. I randomly started thinking of players like Gazza, for example, and he misses out.
That's what I thought of as well.
A classic one that I've talked to you offline is Ravanelli as well. Ravanelli feels like a player that's been at a lot of clubs, but unfortunately he was under that threshold as well. So yeah, it was interesting to kind of delve into their history. I mean, I think certain clubs surprised me in certain examples as well, but I won't spoil it. Let's go through it anyway.
Yeah, what I'd say, a lot of Italians or people in the Italian league love to move around. Like they really don't care about playing for their rivals, do they?
No, like, they don't.
You'll get so many throughout the years that have played for Inter, AC and Juve or you know, Roma and Lazio or something like that. It's just, yeah, it's, you don't see it as much in, certainly in like Spain. Mm. I think I've got a few English league ones on there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I think for the listeners' benefit, there's a common trend. So when we dish out this list between the two of us, you'll start picking up as to what that trend is. And I think a really good point you made offline, actually, Jack, was the fact that a lot of these players benefited from Bosman, the Bosman ruling, essentially. Mm. So not necessarily with all of the examples, but I think the longevity of certain players certainly benefited from that ruling in itself. So, yeah, let's go through it. So let's start off with your number 10. Who was your number 10?
So my number 10 is Prozinecki.
Ooh.
Who, to be honest, at first, he wasn't one I thought of as definitely has played for 10 clubs.
No,
but I
yeah,
thought I'd
true.
Check him out just in case. And I'm glad he did, yeah, because he played for about, I think he was clear on this, I think he was for about 15 where he made over 12 appearances. And yeah, he's one of them, that Yugoslavia team from the late 80s and early 90s, really exciting team before they got sort of broken up into Croatia and stuff. And a guy that we've had on a few times, Michael Hamlin, he's on Twitter as 80s Nights Football, absolutely raves about Prozinecki. And yeah, I think he's definitely had an influence on me in doing my sort of research and things like that.
I really loved him as a player, although I only saw him latter stages. So I think the first time I was exposed to him was 96, Euro 96.
Yeah.
And then obviously he had that spell out Portsmouth as well. And then when you delve into his history, obviously Real Madrid, Barcelona, you hear about him being a chain smoker and the stories that came out of it. I mean, there's a classic scene that I came across on YouTube where he's, I think it's Yugoslavia essentially, but yeah, he's in his own half taking the ball and he's just doing circles around all of the opposition players. Like he's just going up and down and you're thinking, blimey, this guy had an engine on him. But it's also the tricks that he had. I mean, he was just clever, just so clever with the ball. And yes, almost one of those players that you wish was around right now, because I swear he'd be an incredible talent right now. Maybe to an extent that's robbed off on the likes of, say, Modric these days. But yeah, he was a box of tricks, I have to say. So fair dues on that one. Really good shout. I didn't even think of him. So well played there.
Yeah, sometimes you just, as you were saying earlier, you just pluck names out of the air and kind of hope. Exactly. That might fit the criteria because, he was one. He's proper personality, played with personality as well. And you don't get as many sort of characters like that these days.
Definitely not. Do you want me to go through my number 10 then?
Yeah.
So this guy is another character, shall we say. For a lot of listeners, they may associate him with certain spells at English clubs. But this guy had longevity to the max, let's put it that way. Had various spells as player manager as well amongst this. So in total, he had 30 clubs. This includes second spells. So don't worry, it does hit the criteria. And just looking at his total, it's 829 appearances, scoring 256 goals. He was primarily a striker, and that man is Steve Claridge. Currently, I was looking it up, he's manager of Salisbury, by all means doing quite well there. But yeah, guy that, he came to Wycombe Wanderers, believe it or not, during a spell with Johnny Gorman at the time. But I think my early memories of him was Leicester City, really. I know previous to that, obviously, he had a good spell at Birmingham City. But yeah, it was primarily Leicester that I recall about him, how he played. Obviously, helped that Martin O'Neill side first get up out of what was called the First Division into the Premier League at the time, and had a good spell in the Premier League at the time. Looking at his record, he didn't actually score too many goals in 63 appearances. He only scored 17 goals. But
I think
that's
he got a cup final winner, though.
That's it. Exactly.
One of the years,
he scored in the what was it, the League Cup, wasn't it, as well?
Mm.
But yeah, I think the main thing to kind of say about Steve Claridge was he was probably the first Grealish as well, thinking about it. He was the first man to not wear shins as shin pads at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very strange in that sense. He had a kind of superstition about that. But what can you say about him? He was a typical target man, got himself stuck in, had a bit of pace, shall we say? Maybe not so much towards the latter part when he was joining about 15 clubs in one season. But his longevity is incredible, even though that didn't really count for too much in this criteria. The only club that really counted in that mix, it was 2005-2006, where he was at Bradford City, made 26 appearances and scored 5 goals. So, yeah, he was a typical journeyman. When you look at his kind of clubs, I mean, it's incredible. So since he left Wickham in 2005, went back to Millwall, never made an appearance, then went to Gillingham for one appearance. 2005-06 season, he was at Bradford. Then for part of it was on loan at Walsall, then at AFC Bournemouth. So I think they would have been kind of going into first division perhaps at that time. Then he kind of dropped down to the lower leagues. So Worthing, Harrowborough, Weymouth and Gosport Borough before he ended up at Salisbury in 2017. So incredible bloke. What was your thoughts on Steve Claridge?
He was an honourable mention and he's actually the first name I would think of when you say journeyman. Like, he's a proper journeyman. And I know that it probably gets bandied around a little bit of an insult, and maybe a lot of the players on this list wouldn't normally get referred to as journeyman. But yeah, this guy, he's had such a weird career because he's bounced up and down as well. Like, he's gone from like the Premier League to League One or Division Two or whatever it was then. Back up to like Division One, back down, back up. And yeah, when you said he finished playing in 2017, I was thinking, I know he's about 50 odd now, but I wouldn't be surprised if he turns out again and just does like a random appearance.
He probably could do a few laps around the pitch, that's for sure.
Yeah, but he'd honestly be my dream guest for this feature sessions thing I've been doing, because we're asking them to pick, you know, the best players that they played with. He's played with
quite
an insane amount of players.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, Steve Claridge, if you're listening, join this podcast, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have to get that petition going. But I'm trying to think, have I had any of his ex-teammates on or anything like that?
Ooh.
I don't know, to
think.
Be fair.
Do you well,
I might just have had John Salah, because
John Salah
was at Brentford at one point. I don't know if he was there at the same time, but
just trying to think. You had Matt Jarvis recently, but I don't know if he's missed him, because I've got a feeling at that season maybe Gillingham were in a lower league compared to Wolves at the time. I'm not 100% sure though on that one. I'd have to research that myself. But trying to think of your previous guests, Greg Halford. Can't see any crossovers there. I can't think on the spot, I'm afraid. But yeah, let's move on to number 9. Then I'll start off with mine. This one came into my head literally a day before we actually gone in to record. And he's a classic player. Everyone would have heard of him from his 90s and 80s England exploits, and that's Peter Beardsley. Started off his career at Carlisle United, had a few spells in Canada, but everyone will know him for his spells mainly at Newcastle United and Liverpool, also Everton. Towards the latter part of his career, believe it or not, he had a brief spell with Bolton Wanderers that season they first came into the Premier League. And then, interestingly, obviously, when Keegan and that revolution at Fulham took place, he was down there as well for a period of time. And his club that kind of tipped me over was Hartlepool United, believe it or not, in the 98-99 season. Didn't even think he was there. But yeah, he made 22 appearances, scoring 2 goals.
I think he was from that way,
maybe
that's why.
Exactly. But I think the main thing that sting or strikes out about Peter Beardsley was he was kind of an undervalued player to an extent. Yeah. I think he was underrated to an extent as well, because he kind of played that number 10 role to an extent, but he could chip in with goals. And the interesting thing, he wasn't your traditional striker, was he? I mean, he was one player that could play off the wings, for example. So he's kind of very diverse and agile. And you look at his career stats, 735 appearances, 239 goals. I mean, I'm not even including England stats in this mix. And yeah, I think even a lot of England players at the time that played with him actually said he was underappreciated, underrated member of that squad, because I think everyone associates that England sort of 80s, early 90s as being the Gary Lineker period, really. And then you had like star players like Brian Robson even, but yeah, I think everyone kind of reminisces about him. So I had to include him just based on historics, really, with him. Like, although he maybe not had the glory at certain clubs, I think that spell at Liverpool, Everton and Newcastle in particular in that kind of mid-90s really stands out for me, because he did so much at Everton, did so much at Liverpool, and he came back home to Newcastle, his beloved club, and helped them up as well. And in that Premier League season, 97, 98, really pushed Man United for that title race, didn't he? So, it was an integral part of that squad. So, be interested to hear what you think about him, but also your number nine.
Yeah, well, I will say he's my number eight, actually. So he's higher. So I'll talk about him a little bit. But I think he'd do better in today's game as well, because a lot of teams are sort of playing 4-4-2, especially England. I think he's won a bit like Scholes, where they maybe didn't get the best out of him, even though he had quite a few caps still. Mm. Pat Nevin put him in his best team. And John Clark, actually, the people that they play with. And yeah, Pat Nevin in particular was raving about him. And just like, he just would do better today, I think, in that sort of number 10 role, which is a lot more common. You know, a lot of teams playing maybe just the one up front or whatever. And yeah, just his eye for a pass and his skills. Yeah, and definitely. To play for Liverpool and Everton and kind of be a bit of a...
Yeah.
You know, cult hero, whatever, at both is tough to do as well.
Yeah, that's very hard to achieve, but he somehow managed to do that. And although I kind of more recognise him for the Newcastle period. Historically, you look at his past and boy, did he achieve some good stuff there as well, to be fair. So, so who did you go for at number nine then?
So my nine was Luca Toni.
Oh, yeah. I've got him a bit higher up. I've got him as my number eight. But yeah.
Okay. Talk
about your Luca Toni then.
Yeah, I just... When I was sort of growing up early teens, this guy just was bagging so many goals week in, week out. And I think when he went to Bayern Munich as well, it was quite a big move, because Italians pretty much always stayed in Italy, other than Ravanelli, as you said earlier.
Yeah, exactly. But,
they did hit their sort of clubs, but it wasn't normally going to big European giants like Bayern Munich, and he did really well there as well. Obviously excellent in the air because of how tall he was. And I think Italy, although they've had a load of great strikers throughout the years, a lot of them haven't done as well for their national team. But Toni was really good at that 06 World Cup when they won it. And it all seemed to come together, really. Because if you look at, like, even in the Euros, when they won the Euros, like, it wasn't their strikers doing anything, was it? It was the defenders that were doing it. But he's a guy from my childhood, really, that I remember quite fondly.
Definitely. I mean, looking at him, what kind of helped me out was the fact that he seemed to go through lots of Italian clubs in his early stages of his career. But yeah, I reminisce with you. What I remember him of was Fiorentina, that time at Bayern. And towards the latter stages, it was Juventus as well, because he had a season down there as well. But yeah, primarily it was that Bayern Munich spell, where it wasn't just his ability as a target man. He was really good with his feet as well, to be fair, for a big man. You know, he
Yeah.
was really good from that
Yeah,
point
yeah.
of view. And you had that classic celebration with his
Oh
hands
yeah.
where he did that
This is
twist.
audio, but
Yeah, people won't be able to
yeah.
see us doing it, but yeah, he had that kind of twist of his hands, basically. So yeah, legends in terms of Italian status, that's for sure. And yeah, I had him as my number eight, to be fair. So I think we've got just a reversal, haven't we, in our number eights and nines. So I think we
Yeah.
should just move on to our number seven. So what was your number seven?
So my number seven, and I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. This guy wasn't in my original list, but we
Yeah.
slightly, as you kind of intimated earlier, made it a little bit easier on the criteria. So it's Nicolas Anelka.
Yes, yeah.
So he just about hits the criteria on the 10 clubs, 12 appearances at each one. And I think in terms of Premier League players as well, he's got to be one of the sort of top two or three for number of clubs played for. But he really did play for some big clubs in there.
Yeah.
He started off at, well, we got him from PSG, but Arsenal was kind of where he made his name. We made a lot of
Yeah.
money on him at Madrid, and
And in
then playing
fairness,
for
he could have
Liverpool and
played for a
stuff.
lot longer, couldn't he? He could have played for a lot longer at the time.
Because when did he sort of,
If you
when he left
remember,
Chelsea,
yeah.
that's kind of when it was like, I don't know how serious he was taking football then, because he went to China, didn't he? And then
Yeah,
I
I
think he
think
went to
everyone was
India at
going to
one point.
China to make their money, weren't they, at that time, to be fair. But yeah, in fairness to him, he did stick it out at Chelsea. If you look at career stats, that was the longest kind of stint in terms of his career stats. Spent had the most amount of appearances when I was looking at his goal scoring exploits. Yeah, he scored the most there as well, in fairness. Although his goal to game ratio would be a little bit lower in comparison to the likes of when he was at City, for example. Even I would say argue potentially Arsenal as well when I'm looking at this mix as well. I had him personally a little bit higher than yourself, just purely because of the clubs, the stature of these clubs. And yeah, it's interesting the career path that he had. I don't know if you saw the documentary on
I've
Netflix,
not
The
yet. I
Assault.
want to see that. Yeah, is it still on there
Yeah,
now?
I believe so, but I definitely recommend it. I mean, it's interesting, like it's how he got perceived as opposed to what his character was. I seem to remember hearing a interview with John Terry where he was asked by the press about him, and he said that the kind of persona that came across about him just sulking around, being a negative attitude, like he was far from it. He was all about just 100% wanting to be the best that could possibly be. And I think, you know, that spell at Real Madrid really set it off in terms of, I think he was too young to get exposed to that environment. But at the time, obviously, it was partially his brother, wasn't it? His brother's influence there made him move from Arsenal to Real Madrid. They got big money at the time. He was a big player as well during that period of his career. And yeah, unfortunately, it just didn't work out. But ironically, he went to PSG where, you know, he was at home, supposedly. But again, it didn't work out for him there because, yeah, combination of the ultras, the team, as well as the manager, just didn't get the right blend there. And I think it seems interesting that his career, where he made the most of his career anyway, was the Premier League. That's where he made a name for himself. So after PSG went on that loan spell to Liverpool, like if you speak to Liverpool fans, they really wanted to sign him. For whatever reason, behind the scenes, they decided not to. And then Man City took him up. And I remember that season, Kevin Keegan really, you know, he had to splash some cash, you know, to kind of develop that team, and he was that kind of upgrade, I suppose, at the time, got them fundamental goals to keep them up most seasons. And yeah, from there on, it kind of petered out, went to Fenerbahce, and then Sam Allardyce brings him back to Bolton, basically. So yeah, interesting career path, that's for sure. But yeah, I had him personally a little bit higher. So yeah, let me talk about my number seven then. I went for Craig Bellamy. Yeah.
Okay. He's another one that gets lumped in with the
in
that conversation, isn't it, with lots of Premier League clubs.
I have to say, it wasn't one that sprang to mind when we're talking about Bellamy. But yeah, obviously when you look at the amount of clubs, I suppose he was a disruptive influence to an extent. When I've heard a lot of podcasts of ex-players, they talk about the fact that he was just cheeky. He just thought he could get away with things. And that's why he probably had a lot of clubs to his name, to be fair. But yeah, when you look at his latter part of his career, obviously, I suppose to an extent, that's where he started to maybe mellow a bit. But that's probably a bit far stretched in terms of, because when you look at his spell at Liverpool, for example, his spell at Cardiff as well, Cardiff was the homecoming, so to speak, and Cardiff were in the Premier League. But yeah, he wasn't able to kind of contribute in the same kind of goal ratio that he'd done in his earlier career. So, yeah, I remember him like exploding onto the scene with Norwich City back in the old First Division, as it was called. And then Coventry City decided to snap him up on a kind of a cheap 6 million at the time, if I remember rightly. Kind of very similar to the Robbie Keane kind of scenario, where they just kind of gambled on these lower league talents that were coming through from these clubs. And yeah, he had a good spell at Newcastle United. Obviously, I believe there wasn't much love lost between him and Shearer. But yeah, I don't think a lot of people got along with Shearer by the sounds of things, to be fair. But yeah, he still, when you look at his goal to game ratio there, was quite decent, because I seem to remember he came on a lot as a sub. So a player that could just stretch out defenders. And then when you look at his kind of other clubs, so Blackburn Rovers, 27 appearances, 13 goals. That was just a sole season before he went on to Liverpool. And then you had him at West Ham and Man City. So yeah, interesting kind of character. I don't know where he ranks for you in terms of player and ability, and if you feel like he wasted his talent to an extent, but certainly from a Wales perspective, he was kind of a key kind of player at the time, if I remember rightly, you know, with the likes of Robbie Savage and Ryan Giggs. He was kind of really fundamental for that Wales squad, wasn't he?
Yeah, I didn't have him in my 10, but I think he's one where there's a few on this list that will have like a standout club and they've done particularly well at a certain club and season. But Bellamy was pretty consistent.
That's it.
Pretty much his whole career. Like he played for so many different managers, so many different styles of football. And to be able to just play at a high level under all those different kind of environments is a bit crazy, really. And yeah, he definitely one of the best Welsh footballers in the last sort of 20, 30 years. He's right up there, I think, just below, you know, your likes of Bales and Giggs and stuff. But he's probably knocking on the door for the next best after that, really. He's, yeah, I think he'd be a nightmare to play against as well.
Whether you're if you're a defender, you'd hate to play against him. Just constantly niggling at you. And if it's not niggling, it'll be his pace. His pace was electric at his prime anyway, that's for sure. So what was your number six then? Talked about your number seven?
Yes, that was Anelka. So my number six was Hernan Crespo.
Yeah, a player that I had a little bit higher up as well.
Yeah, so he's another one that he loved the Italian league. I think he was the world record transfer at one point, or certainly
he's had a few totals, hasn't he? I want to say.
Yeah, he's probably one of the most, like, especially if you like adjusted it for inflation, probably one of the most expensive players ever. When he came to Chelsea, it was massive when he went there, because that was like the first like major signing of the Abramovich era, I'd say. Yeah. Like, they got like Joe Cole and people like that who were pretty good, but this guy was
It was a different level, wasn't it?
And he just, I really liked him. I mean, he scored goals, but I think he had a little bit about him as well anyway. And some of the finishes that he did. I remember the Champions League final, the one that they lost, Istanbul. But I think he got two in that game. One of them was just incredible goal. And yeah, he just, I think he's big part of Chelsea's history, even though he obviously gets overlooked because of the likes of Drogba and stuff. But it was a real statement back in the day.
He really didn't settle very well initially. He didn't settle in. And I want to say it was after Mourinho left that he came back into the Chelsea squad again and started playing again. I can remember him from his Serie A spell. So where I was at Parma, for example.
That Parma side was unreal.
Incredible, wasn't it? I mean, that squad was always in UEFA Cup or Cup Winners Cup competitions, if you remember that far back. But yeah, I think the big spell that people probably most remember him for is Lazio, where he came for that Scudetto winning squad with Sven in charge at the time. And his goals were critical for that season when they did win the Scudetto. And interestingly, obviously, he only transferred for one season to Inter Milan before he got sold to Chelsea. But if you speak to a lot of the Inter Milan fans, they really rated him even then. So for me, it was incredible when he first burst onto the scene in Parma with that, as you said, the great squad that Parma had. But yeah, Lazio was another level as well, because if you remember the likes of Nedved, you had Juan Sebastian Verón, for example, in that midfield. They were just feeding him pretty much, and he was just clinical. One of the best kind of strikers, I think, that could just turn any opportunity into a goal. That's the difference with him. Journey kind of Argentinian player that can kind of reminisce that was that clinical was probably Batistuta.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've had loads as well. I mean, you look at their past, they just seem to breed strikers for fun, to be fair. But yeah, Hernan Crespo was a good shout.
But as you said, like, it could just kind of get a goal out of nothing. And I mean, but Stewart's better than Crespo, no doubt. But in terms of goals, in terms of type of goals they could score, and I mean, I even think about Aguero and stuff. Like, all these Argentinian strikers, a lot of them are very good in the box, clinical. But I don't know, Crespo had that strength, that kind of power as well that maybe some of them don't have. He's another one which just any sort of defender you come up against, he's got something for you, whether it's faster than you, stronger than you, better in the air than you. He's just an all-round just top striker.
Exactly. So I'll go through my number six. So we've got Rivaldo, that a lot of listeners may recall from his Barcelona spell and Brazil, obviously, appearances. But yeah, he accumulated a lot of clubs towards the latter part of his career, especially obviously after Barcelona. He didn't have a great spell at Milan, for example, at AC Milan, but then he went up back to Cruzeiro and then Olympiacos, AEK Athens. Then he had a spell in Turkey before going back to Brazil. So, but yeah, what I'd remember of Rivaldo was when he came, should we rephrase that actually? When I first knew of Rivaldo, which was at Deportivo La Coruña. It was this kind of Brazilian that came into La Liga, scored lots of goals. And if I remember rightly, he was more of an attacking midfielder at the time. But then once he got that transfer to Barcelona, became more of a pinnacle kind of forward for them. And everyone will kind of reminisce about that overhead volley that he did in one of those games. The bicycle kick. I mean, the guy just was clinical as well. It's such a good touch on him. At one point, I think if it wasn't for the fact that Ronaldo was in that Brazil squad, he was one of the best out there as well, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, I remember him vividly for the goals he scored for Barcelona in that Van Gaal kind of Barcelona squad that kind of played, I suppose, to an extent, total football, but they were a bit more, I suppose, clinical is what I'd phrase that Barcelona squad, because you obviously had that Dutch influence in that team as well. But yeah, he was just that bit of class that kind of made a difference in certain games. And yeah, he was a hell of a player. What did you think of Rivaldo?
Yeah, I had to go a fair bit higher, actually. I just think he's in danger of not being remembered, almost. Like, you very rarely hear him now. And if you do, it's as part of the 3 R's in Brazil. Like, you don't even hear about his club football. And he held up Barcelona for a number of years, really. I mean, him and Kluivert, but I would say more him than anyone. And yeah, they probably wouldn't be the club that they were today if he wasn't propping them up and making sure they were challenging for league titles and things like that. And yeah, just, I think he's almost got the perfect build for like a second striker. Like, he's tall, a bit wiry, powerful left foot, just really acrobatic as well. And yeah, as you said, that goal from against Valencia, that bicycle kick, and he could just do stuff like that. Yeah, I try and give him as much props as I can, because I just think people either forget about him, or the thing that comes to mind with a lot of people is that play acting against Turkey.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's stiff. I probably would put Ronaldinho ahead of Rivaldo in like all time, but in terms of for Brazil, Rivaldo was probably better. Like, he in the 2002 World Cup, which is really my first World Cup I vividly remember, he was, until the real late stages, he was the man, even more than R9. And then at 98, he was very good as well. One of the best players at the World Cup then. So he's got two all-time great kind of World Cup performances under his belt.
Yeah,
he has won a Champions League and he's won league titles and stuff. And Journeyman, he is one that I would say as well, after Steve Claridge, he's probably the continental journeyman
that I
would think of, as well as someone else that's a bit higher on probably both our lists.
Yeah, exactly.
As probably the person that sort of comes to mind, like, when that happens. But I love the way that he'd won kind of what he needed to win, and then he just went to Greece and Brazil and I think maybe Turkey or another country, just did a world tour, basically. And you didn't really see people doing that so much.
No, definitely. But yeah, hell of a talent, that's for sure. So let me reminisce about my number five now. So Juan Sebastian Verón. Obviously,
that's a top shout out.
He wasn't one that naturally came to mind, but when I delve into his past, you kind of start seeing, well, he had a lot of appearances, especially going back to Argentina. But yeah, the guy was just pure magic in terms of his Serie A spells. In particular, as we reminisced about Hernan Crespo, he was there at Parma, he was there at Lazio. Obviously, Man United fans don't have kind words about him. But yeah, he did turn out 51 times for them and scored 7 goals, which that's the other element of Verón that people forget, because I think they remember him as being that tough tackling midfielder that would just lay on like passes and be the creator to an extent. But he had goals to his game as well. But yeah, obviously he got that move thereafter to Chelsea. And then obviously had the loan spell at Inter before going back to Argentina. But yeah, when you look at the games he played in, obviously the biggest ones in terms of his kind of main highlights, I suppose, is the spells in Serie A for the likes of Parma and Lazio. And yeah, hell of a player. But again, I think a bit like Rivaldo, what you said, I'd kind of reminisce about Verón. I don't think a lot of people will appreciate him and probably will forget about him because, yeah, he doesn't get talked about in that kind of same vein. And I think he's a really underappreciated player in that sense, because he did a job that not many kind of recognize sometimes. I think if you're playing with him, you do recognize him. But as a fan, sometimes you forget about those kind of players and what they actually contribute to your actual team's performance. So, yeah, very good player, I thought. Looking at his total stats, 515 appearances and 68 goals. I mean, again, when I'm saying 68 goals, that's a hell of a lot for a player that was primarily a defensive midfielder. So, yeah, great player. And he could play with both feet as well. That was the interesting thing about him. He could play with both feet. So, yeah, really rated him. Don't know about you, but, yeah, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I had no idea that he played for so many clubs. So if I had to guess, I would have said he did one Argentinian club wherever he sort of started out, then Parma, then Lazio, United, Chelsea, and then back to Argentina. And I know it was I know he did really well when he went back to Argentina, and he was sort of one of the best players in sort of South American football. And there was a whole big thing of, you know, did he flop in England or whatever? And he's obviously not a bad player, a bit like, you know, Diego Forlan as well.
Yeah.
Sort of similar that he didn't do well at United. And, oh, yeah, I would have, so that, what's that, that's six clubs or something is what I would have guessed. I would have had no idea he played for so many, to be fair.
Yeah, it was more towards that end spell, obviously, with Argentina, going back to Argentina. So, yeah, that's where he kind of started to rake up a few more appearances there, for example, which just tipped him over here in this example anyway. So, who was your number five?
My number five was another Argentine. We're going back a little bit here, and it's Mario Kempes. So he was one very late in his career. He sort of managed to sneak in on the list. But we did a pod recently with who I mentioned earlier, Michael Hamlin, 80s and 90s football, on the top 10 Argentinian players. And he's one that's very difficult to rank because he's basically had an amazing 1978 where he's had one of the sort of all-time World Cup tournaments, and he did very well at Valencia in the years that he was there. I remember I went to the Mestalla and did the stadium tour there, and they talked quite a lot in that about the sort of late 70s Valencia sides in that as well. And he played for a lot of clubs, but yeah, he is one where I think it's probably one or two clubs where he's really stood out. And some of the others, he's sort of just turned up for a season and done bits. And he's not got the longevity, maybe necessarily, that some others do. But when he was at his peak, he was a top player. And I think he would have been in contention for the Ballon d'Or. Like those days, you couldn't win it if you were from South America. There's only European footballers. But yeah, maybe these days he might have a Ballon d'Or to his name and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's one of these guys, I think, growing up, learning about the history of the World Cup. He's always a name that's going to be in the history books, I think. I don't think I would necessarily forget about him, but...
Yeah, I've just brought up his stats. And, yeah, like you say, he's incredible, like, kind of goal-to-game ratio with certain clubs here. So even towards the latter part of his career, where he's only, for example, Fernandes, Vial, I've never heard of them, but yeah, 11 games, 5 goals. I mean, like, in fairness to the guy, a bit of a legendary status, obviously, back in Argentina. But yeah, when you look at his spell, even at Valencia, incredible. But yeah, just, talismanic bloke, to be fair. So really good in that sense. So yeah, can't recall seeing him, to be honest. It's not a name that springs to mind, I have to say. So yeah, you got me on that one for a historic kind of journeyman. That's for sure.
He basically, like, so he's more famous for definitely international football. And although he still played after that 78 World Cup, he didn't really do anything after that. So I think he played for 3 or 4 more years and didn't score a goal,
right,
on the international. But he did so well at that World Cup and got Argentina their first World Cup. That, like, he's probably always going to go down as one of their best strikers, yeah, probably.
That's true. That's true. Right. Go for your number four, because my number four is Nicholas Anelka, and we've already spoken about him. So what was your number four?
Okay. So my number four is Italian / Australian, I suppose. Christian Vieri, or Bobo.
Yeah.
Is that an Australian nickname, Bobo, or is that Italian?
I have no idea, to be fair, but I think it's a combination of both, because he was affectionately known as Bobo by the Italians, because obviously they more affectionately called Bambino, don't they, for babies, for example. Yeah. So, yeah, Bobo was definitely affectionate for the Italians. But, yeah, that's a hell of a striker you've got there. I remember that one season he had at Atletico. It was 24 goals, 24 games, something stupid like that.
Yeah. They were turning out every year. They were just having a new striker every year, and they were all doing good. But yeah, he really did the rounds in Italy. Like, he played for everyone. He played for so many teams. Although he only just hit the criteria, to be fair. But he had quite a few teams as well where we made like under 10 appearances and stuff too. This guy was, again, growing up when I was sort of 8 or 9, he was one of the real top strikers in the world. Inter Milan is definitely where I associate him the most. And I guess that's where he was the longest as well. I've not got a quote to hand, but Fergie, he had a quote about, I think he was asked about Vieri and Inzaghi or something.
Right.
It wasn't the born offside quote, but it was essentially saying that, you know, all Inzaghi could do was put the ball in the back of the net, but Vieri could literally do anything, and he was sort of a, I don't know if Rolls Royce of a footballer is the right word, but
I seem to remember he said something like that. Yeah, because he was he was an incredible striker. For the Italian national squad, I mean, most fans had him as the first choice, even though some of the national coaches didn't have him as the first choice necessarily. But yeah, he was just such a great build for like a target man, but he was so agile with his feet. And if I remember rightly, he was left-footed, which made it even more special. The way he could strike a ball was just incredible. I remember him lashing it occasionally from like, you know, not even from like close range, it was from distance, and yeah, you wouldn't want to be on the end of it because it was that like fearsome. But yeah, he was just incredible, like in terms of his style of play. And I think what deterred a lot of managers from actually, you know, taking gamble on him was they perceived him as being like a chubby player. Because obviously in his face, he was quite big, wasn't he? Quite rounded. Mm. And I think there was some maybe negative press about his diet, should we say. But I'm sure if you saw scenes of him taking off his shirt, you would see they were just pure muscle. That's the difference with him. He was just, one of those players that, you wouldn't want to be tussling with him for 50-50, that's for sure. But yeah, definitely a good shout in terms of a striker that was feared for the majority of his time in Serie A, that's for sure. And like I shared with that stat about his spell at Atletico, although it was for one season, that return was insane. That was almost Lewandowski-esque these days, isn't it, really, in terms of goal to game ratio. So yeah, again, a player that is probably really underappreciated, but I suspect he'd be in the top 10 for most Italians in terms of all-time players.
I think he's their top goal scorer at World Cups as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
One of them. Because, yeah, he did. Yeah, certainly in sort of 2002 and I think 1998 as well. I think he actually just missed out on the World Cup winning side, unfortunately. But, yeah, he would have done well in England as well. If he played in England.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? He would have been insane. Right. Being that my number four is Nicholas Anelka, we'll go to number three. So for me, it was Samuel Eto'o.
I'm the same, yeah.
fantastic goal scorer, but I think we only started to appreciate that between his Barcelona into Milan kind of spells.
Yeah,
that really random spell at Anzhi in Russia with that Russian billionaire, basically. But yeah, I mean, that Barcelona team that got the best out of him was when obviously Rijkaard was there, and then obviously when Pep was there before. He obviously had a falling out with Pep, and then continued his rich vein of form with Jose at Inter. Becomes a legend there as well for his goal-to-game ratio there as well. But yeah, obviously delivered Champions Leagues galore. And he credits Jose Mourinho as being the better coach out of him and Pep, which is interesting in that war of words between them. But yeah, it's an interesting character because obviously he started off at Real Madrid because he started off having this really, I suppose, shows and glimpses of being a really talented forward. But this was a Real Madrid side that seemed to just easily dismiss their kind of talents. And yeah, they seemed to just, rather than kind of give them a chance, they kind of let them go on loan. And obviously he moved on to Mallorca, where I think a lot of his kind of early learnings came from in terms of how to be a striker, how to mature as a kind of out and out striker. And that's when Barcelona took a gamble on him. But yeah, I mean, if you look at his latter part of his career as well, still decent returns for the likes of Chelsea, for example, even though he only had 21 appearances, still scored 9 goals, for example, in that spell. And if I remember, for a majority of that, that was mainly coming off the bench as well. Had that really random spell at Everton. That was really random. And then, yeah, when I'm looking at his stats, Antalyaspor in Turkey, where he scored 44 goals in 76 games. I mean, yeah, not to be sniffed at. I mean, even towards the end of his career, he was at Qatar SC, 17 appearances, 6 goals. So, yeah, he's decent return for a striker. And if you remember him, he was a very pacey striker as well. So, you know, he could stretch out defenders. And I don't know about you, he seems to have that just knack of turning opportunities into goals, like we said about Crespo. He was just one of those the really clinical strikers that I think it was the, and I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but it was that Arsenal final in the Champions League. You just don't want to be facing him. And yeah,
no.
Obviously he was really feared of at that time as well. Yeah, what was your thoughts of Eto?
I think he's still the best African player of all time. Salah's probably trying to make a case for it, but yeah, I think he's really underappreciated. Like,
yeah,
I don't get why he got binned off at Barcelona and then he straight away made them pay for it the next year at Inter. I remember him quite a lot at Mallorca and at Cameroon with that that sleeveless, that iconic kit.
Yeah,
and this guy was probably only about 20 then, but he was sort of carrying his nation on his back. And I remember when he was at Mallorca thinking, oh, I'd love us to kind of take that gamble on him. Because Bergkamp was coming to the end of his career and we were kind of having to probably get someone else in. And yeah, just really good finisher.
Yeah.
Just really good kind of technical play. You had to be really to get into that Pep side. Like, and yeah.
What stands out for me was he could read the game as well. Just read, like, or, you know, like, opportunistically kind of go, right, let's just see if I just run behind this defender or just turn round him, I might get a chance here. And that's the thing that stood out for me was, even in those games where Barcelona, for example, struggled, he'd still have that knack of creating a chance, like, even if it was a half chance. And, yeah, obviously, at that time, he had the likes of Henry, for example, down one side, Ronaldinho, Messi. You know, he had these kind of playmakers to an extent, and he was kind of seen as the guy to score all the important goals. But that's harder than, you know, what most people think, especially in a team like Barcelona. You know, there's high expectations for you to deliver, and he just constantly delivered. So, yeah, hell of a striker. Just out of curiosity, what was your number 3?
Yeah, he was my 3 as well.
He was your number 3 as well.
Yeah, yeah. And my 2, I think I've I've got Rivaldo at two, so we
spoke about him as well. Well, my number two was Hernan Crespo, which we both spoken okay. about as well. So yeah, I suppose it goes to our number one. So yeah.
It's a now, big name we've not mentioned yet.
There is. Now, I have to just explain context for why I've given this guy number one. I've just purely gone down for longevity, the clubs that he played for. Again, he is a striker, and that man is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. When you look at his stats, incredible striker, still kicking about at AC Milan right now. Didn't think he'd have it at this age, but he does. Keeps himself impeccably fit in that respect. And yeah, I mean, just look at the pressures that he's had at different clubs, and he's still constantly being the talisman at all of them. Obviously, I suppose the kind of words that are kind of associated with him is arrogant, cocky, little shit to an extent. But yeah, the one thing I would say about Zlatan is he was a man that delivered. That's the one thing that really stands out. I mean, yeah, he may have had that arrogance, but certain players did have that arrogance and they delivered. That's the difference, I suppose. And he's still even now a perfectionist in that respect. So, you know, he expects the very best, even in this AC Milan squad, which has been struggling for the last few seasons. He's kind of maybe driven the standards. I think you saw a bit of that when he was at Man United as well, where Man United were going through that kind of drought where they weren't winning stuff. And obviously he helped them propel like their standards. And I think that's the one thing he kind of reminisces, is that almost that slips by the wayside until he turned up. And even at the time when he was at Man United, he kind of voiced his opinions, shall we say, around certain things that were being done at that time. And even says at the time, I think he got charged for having some squash out of the hotel like bar, for example. And he was like, why am I being charged like a pound for this? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, so he was just that kind of person that demanded the very best and treated as an athlete. And you have to hand it to him. He was incredible. Yeah. I just remember him from that Malmo spell, to be fair. I mean, he was that 17-year-old that was just scoring goals for fun. And yeah, obviously, I think at that time when he went to Ajax, I wasn't too sure whether he'd be any good, if that makes sense. Like, he was there for a while.
Big move for a youngster, isn't it, to do?
I think the big spell that made him grow was that spell at Juventus, though, to be fair. So it's the following he spent three seasons in total at Ajax before he moved on. And yeah, obviously that spell at Juve was critical for his career. And then he moved on to Inter before. Yeah, he didn't have that great spell at Barcelona, but when you look at his goal to game return as well, 29 appearances, 16 goals.
I've probably been to his best Barcelona game because we played him at the Emirates, drew 2-2, but he scored twice. One of the goals was an incredible lob.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute... I know he's big, right? But when you see him live, my God, he's like a wardrobe. Like, he's huge. And yet he's still so, like, athletic.
Yeah, exactly.
You get all these angles and things like that. Yeah. He's just an incredible character. I'm not really sure how I feel about him, but I can't deny how good of a player he is. And he's got to be the only player that's was scoring goals in the 90s and he's still scoring goals now.
Exactly.
That's four decades that he's been scoring goals in. It's just incredible. And the calibre of clubs, as you've said, that he's played for. But also, he's got that weird spell at LA Galaxy, which for most people is the end of his career. And yet he's come back and doing just as well at AC Milan as he did in America. He's really ticked all the boxes, like on his career. And it's probably more than that. It's probably about 7 or 8 years in a row that he won a league title, I think, until he joined Man United.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at it, so he would have won stuff. He definitely won stuff if we go back as far as Juve. So he definitely won a Scudetto there with Juve.
Probably at Ajax as well.
Yeah, he definitely did. But yeah, going from Juve, he definitely won a Scudetto there because he moved the season they got relegated to Serie B. Then won at Inter Milan. He would have definitely won a La Liga at Barcelona, probably two there. AC Milan, I'm pretty sure he's had one title there. And then PSG was just consistent, wasn't it? Season after season, there wasn't really a challenge there. So, yeah, yeah, you could easily say there's about eight league titles there. And that's not including like cup competitions then as well, because there would have been a fair few there as well. So, yeah, incredible career. And like I say, still at AC Milan right now, and he's still contributing, he's still scoring critical goals, should we say, as well, because there's been a period, been times where AC Milan haven't been great, and he's just scored the critical goal going into the last minute of a game, for example. So the fact is that he's still got the intelligence and will to kind of still play on in these games. I mean, granted, he can't last 90 minutes these days, but the fact is you can still get about a good 45 minutes out of him, and he still delivers. Yeah. So it's incredible. Even at this point in his career, when you look at his stats, 54 appearances, 33 goals. That's just
incredible. That's insane. And he's 40 years old.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Yeah. I struggled to score, I think, 30 goals in my career, let alone for a season. Mm. So, yeah, incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Did you go for Zlatan as your number one?
Yeah. So when I said Rivaldo was one of those continental journeymen, and there was one more, this was him. I think he's probably the first name that I knew was definitely going to be on this list.
Yeah.
And it was just a case of, is he going to be one? But yeah, thinking about it, it's really insane, some of the stuff that he's achieved. And even if you look at what happens when these teams let him go, I know Inter won the Champions League once they let him go the season after, but from then after that, they've not really done anything. PSG, the season that he left, Monaco won the league.
Mm.
Even though they got all these, superstar players, they didn't win the league, did they, last season either? And then Man United, when he left Man United, they've just gone on a downward spiral as well. So he's got that effect of, when he leaves, teams get worse as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really good player. Not sure if he's a good bloke or not, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I still talent, think...
You just can't deny.
Yeah, I don't like him as a personality, but then, to be fair, like you've just said then, he drove standards, these clubs obviously fell for a reason because those standards have slipped. So, yeah, although you would say he's a pain in the ass, he's a good pain in the ass to have, to be fair. So, and he's probably a player, to be fair, if you were supporting Arsenal, and he did have that opportunity to join Arsenal, isn't it? But yeah, I'm sure you would have reminisced if you had him in your side, you'd love them. You would have loved him.
Yeah, one of them, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
He's one of those that you hate to have playing against your side, but grateful if he's on your side. That's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very, very worthy number one there. And yeah, I know we've got two separate lists, but I'm glad we agreed on the number one anyway. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Cheers, Adam, for doing this. I couldn't have thought of a better person. I think because you do quite a lot of Serie A stuff as well.
Yeah.
Conscious that this would have been good for that too, because of the amount of Italian footballers and stuff that just seem to move about. So that's good. But yeah, before we let you go, if you just want to let the listeners know where they can find you and sort of what you've got going on stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. So for your listeners, they can check us out. So we're called the Hopeless Wanderer Podcast. So we're on our social media platforms of Instagram at the Hopeless Wanderer Podcast or on Twitter at Hopeless Pods. We pretty much go most Thursdays, and you can listen to us from Fridays onwards across all your kind of streaming platforms. And yeah, as Jack alluded to, we talk a lot of, about Serie A, talk a bit of Premier League, but just football in general. This week, we've been talking about conspiracy theories because it's International Week. And as a lot of people know, it's not the most enthralling of football going on right now. But yeah, we talked about our favourite conspiracy theories. So yeah, if you'd like to dive into that episode, it's called Conspiracy. Join us and have a listen. So Jack, many thanks. It's been a pleasure to do this because I have to say just reminiscing about these players has brought back some nostalgia, that's for sure. So thank you for that opportunity anyway.
No problem. Cheers for coming on again, Adam. And remember to keep it.